So anyway, please allow to come in, find a nice spot. It's not as many people as usual this evening, probably because it's their holiday time, but if you have a holiday, it means you've got lots of time, which means you should be coming to the Buddhist Center to do something really holy, I suppose. That's what holiday means. But, of course, these days many people can listen to all these talks online, on YouTube, amazing temple that is YouTube. So many people throughout the whole world listen to these talks. And every time I go overseas, I just come back from 2 weeks teaching a meditation retreat in KL and then over in Penang, and just last night in Singapore, and just telling everybody just, I had like an epiphany some years ago. Epiphany is when you suddenly get this wonderful insight, and it was the insight to the meaning of my life. That was actually earlier on when I was in Indonesia. I think it was in Jakarta, where my books, you know, all of them have been really big bestsellers in Indonesia, so I'm well known over there. And so after the talk, there's about 4,000 or 5,000 people at the talk, then they wanted their books signed. And there was a huge long line of people. 2 hours it took of signing books and smiling for the camera, signing books, smiling for the camera, signing books, smiling for the camera. And that's okay for the first hour. But after an hour of doing this, I thought, what the heck am I doing? I'm a monk. I should be in some cave somewhere meditating. What am I doing signing books and having my mugshot taken? Photograph. You know, look, honestly, I am not the hottest of guys. I'm old and fat. What do you want a photo of me for? When I was young and really was handsome, no one wanted photographs of me then. But now, so anyway, even though I can't understand why that happens, and it really does happen, I'm not exaggerating, even though I don't understand why, still at the same time, I decided to do it, but got more and more negative as the minutes strolled past by, and as my hand got more sore, and my smile started to fade. It takes a lot of energy to smile for 2 hours. So much so that that's where I decided to actually needed exercises every morning. I always do 10 push-ups every morning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So exercise my smiling muscles, and they're pretty fit these days. Because as a Buddhist monk, you don't need to run anywhere. You know, you're not supposed to run. There's a good reason why you don't run. I'll just a little anecdote for you. Why monks don't run. Many, many years ago, there was I was told a story by this monk Ajahn Chah, long time ago before he died. He said there was a monk who was wandering from place to place in Thailand, and for solitude, for freedom, meditating. And he came to one village late in the afternoon and told the headman of the village that I've just arrived. You have to tell the headman so the villagers know to get some food for you the following morning, for your alms round, otherwise you don't eat. And he said, I just arrived, I want to meditate in the forest, the jungle close by, just to let you know I'll be here on alms round in the morning. And that's when the headman told him, oh, you better stay here in the village with us. He said, no, I'm a forest monk. No, stay in the village. There was a tiger in the vicinity. In the last few days, it's eaten 2 or 3 water buffaloes and even one of our kids. Now, it is a really dangerous, this is the jungles. 40 years ago, very dangerous tiger. But this monk said, I am not afraid of tigers. Show me where the tiger comes from. He said, I can't do that, it'll kill you. He said, no, I am a monk. I have no fear. Really? Said the headman, okay, follow me. And about a kilometer outside of the village, you could see where the tiger trail cut through the jungle. And the monk said, right, here. I am going to put my mosquito net, and here I'm going to stay tonight. I'm going to face down the tiger. Real brave monk. Would you be able to do that? Knowing there's not a man-eating tiger, but a monk-eating tiger. Right there is going to come tonight. Are you willing to face the tiger in the middle of the night? So this monk was really a tough monk. And so the headman helped him set up, and then the headman went back, make sure before he got dark he didn't want to face the tiger, let the monk face the tiger. And that night the monk was meditating so peacefully. So calm in the jungle. Once all the cicadas stopped their racket, the jungle at night time is just so peaceful. And he was meditating peacefully, 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 breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. And that's when he started to hear. That's the best I've got for sound effects. Not very good, but we're running on the cheap in our Buddhist society these days. So many stuff, we can't afford anything. So, he heard the sound of footsteps coming towards him. And those footsteps were the footsteps of an animal. So it wasn't any more breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. He reverted to the old Thai way of meditating. They used to do breathing in, Bud, breathing out, Tho. Bud, Tho. Using the name of the Buddha with the in-breath and the out-breath as a protection, as to remind you to be peaceful. Buddha. Buddha. And the footsteps got louder as the animal approached, and his chanting became Buddha, 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 Buddha. And as it got really close, Buddha, 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 Buddha. And it got even closer. He opened his eyes, he couldn't resist it. And he saw this massive tiger. See its white fangs, not teeth, glistening in the moonlight. His big eyes, its huge jaws could rip anything apart. Even Arnold Schwarzenegger would have no chance. Superman, a loser in front of this tiger. This was a huge monster of a tiger. And so he opened his eyes. Again, he changed his meditation object. Not Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Tiger, tiger, tiger. And the next thing he knows, you know, sometimes we just don't know how these things happen. He found himself running towards the village. And his meditation, not very, very quiet now. Instead of doing tiger, 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 tiger. As this animal chased him to the village. Now, the thing with these robes, there is no buttons or zips. If you try running in some of these, things fall off. So first, his outer robe fell off. Still he was running for his life. Tiger, 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 tiger. And then his little upper robe, his little, what they call his vest, fell off. And last of all, because we do have a belt around the center. I was telling people in KL that, you know, I like flying Singapore Airlines. MH is okay. But I'm honestly, the one airline I don't like flying is Qantas. Because one day, this is their service. One day, sorry, Mr. Alan Joyce, but this actually happened. They came up and asked me once, one of the flight attendants. They said, we've been just having a discussion in the galley about you. Now, what do you wear under your robe? What do you wear under your robe? So my answer was, in Buddhism we have the tradition of come and see, find out for yourself. That's true, we don't ever tell you anything. It's giving you a pass so you can find it out for yourself. And that got rid of her. But actually, you should all know, there's nothing under there. That's why I like being around, it's nice and cool in this time of the year. So, there's nothing under there. So this poor monk, as soon as his lower robe fell off, there was no more robes to fall off, nothing. And so this was the monk, because of his shouting, tiger, 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 as he ran into the village. They all sort of, you know, woke up, looked out of their windows, and what did they see? They saw everything. That's what they saw. And he became very famous because of that. The monk who's not afraid of tigers. It's actually a very good lesson, because sometimes we think, ah, we're not afraid of these things, but we don't know until it actually happens if we're afraid or not. But just again, on a tangent, you know, honestly, that I came face to face with a tiger, only about maybe 2 foot in front of me. It's only separated. It's a huge animal. I mean, those tigers are just so amazingly powerful. But it's amazing. Okay, you know, okay, it's a bit of a boast, but I wasn't scared at all. There's not an ounce of fear in me when I came face to face with a tiger. Can you believe that? Yeah, it was in a zoo. And there's big iron bars between me. That's why I wasn't afraid. Big tiger, though. Anyway, back to the... where was I? I forgot where I was, actually. Now, first of all, I was in Thailand, doing the Buddha, being afraid of tigers, running away. Oh, that's right. That is why, you know, that we don't have any... we don't run in these robes. That's where I started this story off. But, because we don't run, we don't get much exercise. But we do exercise this, because this is much more important. To have some happiness and some energy, so we can actually inspire people. Honestly, when I first decided to become a monk, when I was only 23, now I did actually go to all the different Buddhist temples I could find. I wanted to find out, if I want to become a monk, you know, there's so many different types of Buddhism in our world today. You go to the Zen temple, you go to the Mahayana temple, you can go to the Tibetan temple. So many different types of even Theravada Buddhism, the Thai, the Sri Lankan, this joint. You go to the nuns, you go to the monks, where are you going to go? And where I went to those temples which smiled the most. And it's a conscious decision. Because I thought that if I'm going to have a spiritual teacher, if I'm going to learn anything, I want to see the end result first of all. You know, I want to see what happens. You know, if you follow this path and you go to this temple, you meditate for so many years, what's the end result? And if I saw a miserable monk shouting at you, sit up straight, don't point your legs at the Buddha, don't do this, don't do that. That's not the sort of monk I wanted to train under. And if I had a monk who was okay, he didn't shout at you, but he just sat here like a robot. The robot monks never show any emotion at all. The monks with the horizontal mouths. Again, I never liked that. I had enough of that. I just, you know, being in England, stiff upper lip. And those monks out-stiffed the upper lips of Englishmen. But anyway, I wanted people who had a bit of life, some energy, because that energy, that happiness is always infected. Infectious. I got it right in the end. It's infectious. So that's why I actually went to a Thai monastery, because the monks there were actually laughing a lot. And when I eventually went to Thailand, I saw an Ajahn Chah, and he was so funny sometimes. He really, really, really was wise, but also uplifting. Just some of the ways he would speak. For example, I was saying earlier on about becoming aware of your body. Once you're aware of your body, at the very beginning of this meditation, that's what we practice. It's amazing how you can look after your body. But of course, being all our Western monks from the United States, from Europe, me from England, some from Australia, all the monks in Northeast Thailand in those days, because we didn't usually wear shoes, They're very, very poor, simple monks, that we would actually always be cutting our feet. And our feet were always covered with band-aids. I usually had about an average of 6 or 7 on my feet at one time. Because you're walking barefoot, you'd stub your toes, you'd step on a sharp stone, you'd always be injuring your feet. But the Thai monks, they didn't have any band-aids on their feet. And Ajahn Chah, my teacher, was really surprised. How come that all these Western monks, so-called with great educations, well-schooled, how come they've got so many cuts on their feet? And that's when he told me, he said, you Westerners have got stupid feet. And what a wonderful way of looking at it. It was. Our intelligence was up here. We know about quantum physics. We knew about Shakespeare. We knew so much, except how to look after our own body, especially our feet. They're so far away from our head that we hardly ever knew what was going on down there. So we had stupid feet. And of course, after a few more band-aids, we soon actually got intelligent feet, so we never cut ourselves anymore. That's one of the parts of our body. So much of our body is stupid, because we never pay attention to it, we never learn from it, which is why we have many parts of our body are stupid. So, there we learn how to actually have a bit more awareness of our body, thereby being able to be a little bit more healthy, and just, you know, not to injure ourselves so more. So that whenever we are walking in the house, we never bump our head. Oh, but you know, sometimes we're always stupid. So, but we learn from our mistakes. Like I say, I always learn from my mistakes. And I wanted to share sometime in this talk, and now's the opportune time, that I made a big mistake when I was in Malaysia in one of my retreats. Just to show how wise the monk in front of you is, this is a huge mistake which I made. I was having some interviews during the meditation retreat, and this couple came in, a Malaysian girl and a Malaysian man. They sat together, they wanted to interview together. And it was a girl I was speaking to most of the time about her questions on meditation and life. And she was about 20, I would imagine. And the guy was, you know, quite a bit older than her, but not that older, maybe in his 30s. And I could see just the way they kept looking at each other, and she was always, you know, very close to him. They had a very strong emotional bond, these two. So at the end of the interview, I asked her, he said, you know, is that your boyfriend? At which point, she almost died laughing, and he had a big smile on his face, but he was also really shocked. He said, no, that's not my boyfriend, that's my father. It turned out she was only 16, he was in his 40s. But, you know, women I can't tell these days, I'm getting past it. And I thought that she was at least 20, but she's only 16. And this guy was pretty well preserved for a 40-year-old. And he thought it was really, really funny. He never got angry at me because he was actually obviously quite flattered. But it all turned out right in the end. So I don't mind doing this because afterwards he passed me a note. He'd given a donation of 400 ringgit, which is about $130, so I could check my prescription of my spectacles. So at least the temple made some money out of it, out of my stupidity. It doesn't really matter so much, but it all has a happy ending. But all of these times, you do make mistakes, but we learn from mistakes and we grow and we get better. But in particular, what I wanted to talk about tonight, I've done most of the talk already, is, you know, I came in here, I've been travelling, working hard, and I don't know why I have to work hard. I've just been working overseas, now I have to work over Christmas. I was saying that Christmas you usually get penalty rates. You usually get double rates. This is Australia. And so I decided that tomorrow I need a double breakfast caretaker and also a double lunch. Is that right? No, I enjoy doing the work, but I often get very tired and very exhausted. And I learned from those happy monks who I went to go and see how to generate energy. And that's the title of this talk, I'm supposed to be. How to generate energy in life. Because you know what it's like, sometimes you get very tired, exhausted, sick, or even depressed. And depression is a state of very, very low energy. So, even though you're physically exhausted, even though life is so difficult sometimes, there are times as a leader in any community, or just in your family, or when times get very difficult, there's a funeral, there's someone dying, there's tragedy, you lost your job, whatever it happens to be, there is a time when you really can develop some energy up in your mind. And that's what I have to do, and it's not through tea and coffee, it is through something else. Just before I came in here meditating, really tired, but bring up the energy little by little, I found out the ways to develop energy in your life. The first way is actually doing more physical work, as service, of giving, of actually taking your time. You're really exhausted, but you decide, I'm going to give to somebody else. I'm going to serve. Because every time I've done this, it was amazing. One of the first times I was doing this was when I was, monks were making robes. They had to, in the old days, really hard. I don't know if I told this story 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. No good. So, making robes. You know, I give so many talks, a couple of talks every day, so it's really hard to keep track of, you know, when I last told a story. Three monks were making robes. And these robes, you can't go to a robe shop. You can go to Kohl's, you can go to Myer, there's no section there. There's sections of lingerie, of evening wear, of suits, but there's no robe section. So we have to make them ourselves. And they're huge sheets of cloth, which I mentioned to you before. They're very, very practical, these robes. As I've said here before, every time I travel, I am not afraid of the aircraft exploding in midair. Because if it does, this robe doubles as my parachute. It's also my bedsheet. And I also said if ever, you know, you manage to get kidnapped into, you know, a place like, you know, some terrorist area, it's so easy, all I need to do is to cover my face. And this becomes my burqa. I sit in here and I'm totally safe. A robe serves many, many purposes. But it's very hard to make. A huge piece of cloth, it's my bed sheet as well. It's a huge piece of cloth and we have to cut it, sew it in a particular monk's pattern, dye it, and it's a dyeing part, it takes a lot. Over there in northeast Thailand we used to use the wood, fallen limbs from a jackfruit tree. Because the wood has a sap in it, which dyes your robes of this color brown. And it's not easy to do. You have to chop up the wood, you have to boil it, you have to get the water from the well to boil it. Make your own fire, there's no electricity, there's no modern conveniences. You were dyeing your robes in the way that people did it, you know, for the last 2,000 years at least. So it was really hard labor. And it was our tradition that you'd had to dye your own robes before you became a monk. So these three candidates were dyeing their robes. They'd already been working for 2 days solid. No sleep. And it's supposed to be the rule that you shouldn't receive any help. But one evening, after the evening meeting in the monastery in Thailand, I went to the dyeing shed, and the reason why I call it a dyeing shed, because the three monks were close to dying. They were exhausted, they were just, oh no, They've been sleep deprived, haven't slept for, and you had to be there every time. Actually, there's so many stuff you had to do. You just can't take a rest. So they were so exhausted, and I said, guys, I won't tell anyone, you won't tell anyone, I'll look after the dye pot tonight, you can go and take a rest. And I always remember, there was no argument. They were off. Really quickly. They were so desperate for some sleep. And so I looked after that dye pot all night. That night I never slept. And in the morning when the bell went, the bell used to go at 3 o'clock. We used to wake up 3 o'clock every morning. But I always tell people it was always optional. You can always wake up earlier. But not later. And 3 o'clock the bell went. Now these monks came back and they started sort of carrying on where I left off. Made a lot of dye that night. And then I went to the morning chanting and the morning meditation. Now, like many people would understand, if you haven't slept all night, you're really nodding all over the place. That's why many monks had to wear crash helmets in case they hit something. I only made that up, they didn't. We couldn't afford crash helmets. But, that morning, I was full of energy. I had lots and lots of energy, more than I'd ever had before in the morning time. And that was weird. I hadn't slept all night and I'd worked like a dog all night. And I had to ask afterwards. My chanting was really loud, meditation really powerful. And I asked one of the monks that morning on alms round, I said, what? Why? What's happening? I've been working really hard all night, no sleep at all, and I got all this extra energy. I don't feel tired at all. Why? And that's when he taught me about how to create energy. He said, you just spent the night, you broke your rules, but this is fine, I can understand. Now you're not supposed to help these monks. But you were being kind, you were giving service, you were looking after other people, you're actually acting compassionately, doing giving. That is why you had all that energy. And that was so true, and I've used that so often in my monk's life to get that extra energy, that extra boost, because you're doing service, doing something good for others, doing something which inspires you and inspires others, a huge boost of energy. So if you're really exhausted because you've been working hard all weekend, stay behind and vacuum the carpet, mow the lawn, sweep the path, paint the walls. And a car park. Build a car park. I don't know. But it's amazing just how, when you give to others, especially give to a community or society, how a boost of free energy comes. That service, that compassionate action. Not thinking compassion. If you think compassion, oh, may the leaves be swept. Oh, may the dishes be washed. That doesn't work. But you get in there and do it. And it becomes, one, great fun, and two, a source of huge energy in life. One of the reasons why people do get depressed is because they don't do enough service. It's one of my very effective solutions and antidotes to depression. Go and work harder. Do some service, any community service, and you'll find you get big boosts of energy. When I was a student, I was busy being a student, but once every afternoon, on Thursdays I remember, I would go down to the local mental institution, Fulbourne Hospital outside of Cambridge, and volunteer to do some service. Every afternoon. It was actually to the the unit which housed the Down syndrome, when those poor Down syndrome people, I wouldn't call them sufferers because I respect them. They're not sufferers, they're just different, but they, these days, excellent. They're part of our society, they have an incredibly beautiful life, and I really respect them, enjoy their company. So I did that, I was being a goody-goody, I'm going to help and serve others, do some good karma, only because I was actually a Buddhist. Actually, the main reason I went there was not really because I was a Buddhist, because my best friend was a Christian, and he went there. So I thought, oh God, if he goes there, I've got to be at least as good as they are. Keeping up with the Joneses. Spiritual materialism, trying to be as good as the opposition. That's what I was doing it for. Totally for the wrong reasons. Trying to impress. I'm a Buddhist, I'm as good as you are. But I went there much longer than they did. 2 whole years I went there, never missed. And I looked forward to it. I enjoyed it. I got a big boost of energy from it. Just a bit of selfless service. I enjoyed giving and serving. Free boost of energy. And of course, now I look back upon that, and that increased my sense of self-worth. I wasn't just thinking of myself and how sad and difficult life was for me. I was actually going out there and doing something worthwhile. But I realized that also I got far more back than I ever gave. Far more back than these days. Again, I didn't know too much what I was doing when I was young. But now looking back, I learned so much from those wonderful friends who had Down syndrome. I learned how to be sensitive as a man. I still remember the first time, you know, heterosexual, afraid of gays, because of my upbringing. And these men, they would see you, and a big smile would go on their face. A friend was coming. And they hadn't learned how to be English, strip up a bit, restrain, don't do anything weird. And so they came running towards me and gave me this huge hug. And this was in 1969-70, a time when it wasn't done to hug members of the same sex. Do not do that. But they just did it. And it was nice. You feel this beautiful kindness. These were people who had emotional intelligence. Heaps of it. When it came to sort of, you know, intellectual intelligence, what gets you A-levels and O-levels and degrees at university, they didn't have that stuff. But, you know, given the choice between having that emotional sensitivity and understanding the people you live with, or getting all these degrees, I would prefer what they had. And they taught me so much. I often say that, whew, every time I had trouble with a girlfriend last night, or she dumped me, they would spot it straight away. They'd look at me and see, oh, what's happened? I couldn't believe just how sensitive they were. In life, we have some skills which we lack. We compensate by developing other skills. They didn't have verbal skills or being able to do math skills, but my goodness, their emotional skills were huge. So I learned so much that I was giving and serving. What you got back was amazing and gave me a lot of joy and happiness, sensitive to myself as well as to other people. So thank you, all those guys I met in Fort Bourne Hospital. You're part of who I am today, and thank you for doing that. Learned more at your place than I did at Cambridge. So, a little bit of service gives you a boost of energy, and also a little bit of developing a bit of fun and games. Don't just do things just the same old way, because that makes you really depressed. You always try and do things a slightly different way, which is why, you know, we do innovation, as especially in a Buddhist temple. You will come to this temple and it's not the same as other temples, even in Perth, let alone in Thailand. Because sometimes that people are always sticklers for tradition and ritual. They tell you this is what you should do and don't do this other stuff. And you know that, first of all, I think hopefully you all come to this place here on a Friday and you feel comfortable here. You feel welcome. You don't feel uptight. Oh my goodness, how do one approach a monk? What are you supposed to say to a monk? Is there some special language? Look, we are not from Mars. There is not some special monk language. And it's also, if anyone is compassionate and understanding, these monks and nuns should be so so compassionate and understanding. If you do the wrong thing, fine, no worries. Perhaps one of the most offensive things, at least the people who saw it said it was, but when I laughed, you know, totally deflated the issue, and so it wasn't a problem at all. Just standing over there in the corner of the reception area one day, around Chinese New Year, which is in January, February, I was standing there, and a Chinese lady who wasn't really all that knowledgeable about Buddhist etiquette took one look at me, put her hand on my tummy, and started rubbing it for good luck. She rubbed it for good luck. Number one, in the Thai tradition, you're not supposed to touch a monk at all, let alone his tummy, let alone rub it. Me, that felt quite nice. Having your tummy rubbed. Don't often get that. It was an old lady, so, you know, not any possibility she would run away with me. So, for good luck, that's a Chinese one. I don't care. You know, she was happy, and I was laughing, and a lot of other people saw that, and they had a good laugh as well. It was a happy place where people felt welcome, felt joy. So it's that happiness and joy, being able to laugh at the slightest opportunity, the least excuse, is something which builds energy up in your life. Free energy. But getting negative and finding fault and telling people off, while you do get energy when you do scold a person and shout at them, you feel really alive, but that doesn't last that long, and you go down very quickly. Anger just sucks energy out of you so quickly. But happiness and joy and laughter is a free source of energy. There's another reason why sometimes before I give a talk, I didn't have time to do it this time because I just come back, you get a joke book and read a couple of jokes. And when you read a couple of jokes, it actually does uplift you. And I've used that as therapy for people with depression. You tell them a joke, and they look at you. Ugh. So you tell them another joke. Another joke. Another joke. They're laughing. Good. Got there. Because you can't resist jokes sometimes. They just take you away. No matter how negative you are, you crack a joke, and, oh, they're off there. Okay, I'm going to tell you a joke today. This is the only one I remember because I haven't had time to do my research. People say, do you plan your talks? No, but I sometimes plan the jokes. That's all I plan. But she said something today about this head. I'm telling you a joke today. About this head who stayed at home because it never had any legs and never had any body and never had any arms, so it couldn't go anywhere. And one day it was just looking through the window, looking at all these other people, you know, who had arms and legs, who can run around and play football and go on their bicycles and have a nice time. Felt so depressed, this head without a body. And so one day it made a sort of a Christmas wish for Christmas to Santa. What I really want for Christmas is two legs, two arms and a body, just like everybody else. And sure enough, Christmas Day came, and in his little... I can't really have socks. I'm making this up as I go along. How can someone without legs have socks? So, under the Christmas tree, the head rolled down there in the morning, and saw... I got the key parts of the joke, but I'm just making the rest up. Rolled down the stairs in the morning, under the Christmas tree was a package from Mr. Head... And he opened it with his teeth, making it up again. And in the package was two legs, two arms and a body. Oh, his Christmas wish had come true. So he put on his legs, put on his arms and body, and now he felt like a real human being. And he walked out of the door to just test out his new legs and arms. And as soon as he walked out the door, he got hit by a man coming back from a Christmas party and killed. And the moral of the story is, you should always quit while you are ahead. What do you guys expect? How many times have you come here? That's a typical Ajahn Brahm level joke. Anyway, there we go. So, but you tell a real joke. Do you get a bit of boost of energy? Or do you get more suicidal? You get a boost of energy. Come on, yes you do. You can feel the energy coming up. So seeing a funny side of life, even if you have to push it to get a funny side of life, it does help. So, a bit of laughter. And the laughter is all around. A lot of times, what we are laughing at is ourselves and laughing about life. And just, you know, the best stupid stories, like me telling that guy that, you know, oh, you her boyfriend. So that just happens. That's part of our life. We always do stupid stuff. But that is what makes life energized. Taking life too much seriously, you know, whatever's happening, what happens to you is it brings your energy level down. There's enough serious stuff in life which we have to worry about. But when we have the happiness, the energy, we tend to look at life in a much, much more positive way. I don't know, people keep on coming up to me and someone's got cancer and somebody's dying or somebody's dead. And just, I told the lady this afternoon that I've got terminal disease too. I should actually let you all know I've got a terminal disease. It's called life. I'm going to die. And there's no cure for the disease which I've got. Life. So we're all going to die. And so when we start thinking like that, oh, it's so depressing. Wow, there it is. Must be recording me. That's the funeral director organizing my funeral. But I always remember, because I like humor, I always look at the cartoons. Before I read any other news in the newspaper, always the cartoons, because those have got wisdom and they're often uplifting. And one of those cartoons I saw a few months ago, well, should have been in a philosophy book. Peanuts cartoon, Charlie Brown and his little dog Snoopy. And in the cartoons you will always find the human being is the stupid one, the animals are always smart. And okay, this is a joke to music. And this Snoopy and Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown was talking to his dog and getting depressed. This is depression and its cure. Charlie Brown said, "No dog, Snoopy. Life is so sad. One day we will all die." You can't argue with that, can you? One day we will all die. Isn't that so sad? All our loved ones, the people we care about, one day they're all going to part from us. So depressing. But Snoopy came to the rescue with his amazing doggy wisdom, which totally surpasses that of human beings. I think dogs are so wise, that's why they don't have to work. They've got it all figured out. We have to go to work and just work our butts off. Never enough money. There's always enough food for the dog. That's why the dog doesn't need to worry. We have to worry about paying the bills. The dog always has a nice warm place to sleep somewhere. And so Snoopy said to his mate Charlie Brown, he said, "True, one day we will all die, but," and that's the most important, "but most days we won't die." That's the difference between becoming depressed and having a positive attitude. Depressed, yeah, it's true, one day we'll all die, but most days we won't die. So which way do you want to look at life? I prefer the Snoopy view of life rather than the religion according to Charlie Brown. One day is really negative. The other one is actually saying, yeah, it's true, but most days we don't die. Yeah, we might get cancer, but most days we don't have cancer. Yeah, you know, some of us, part of us has got a skin disease. Most of us don't have a skin disease, or most parts don't have a skin disease. Yeah, you've got problems in life, but you know that most moments you don't have problems. Why do you always focus on that part of our weekend where there's a problem? What about all those amazing moments in the next weekend where you don't have a problem at all? You're just enjoying yourself, enjoying the company of your loved ones, your friends, having a good time. Enjoying inviting all your friends over for Christmas. I remember this guy in England, he was a comedian, he said his mother-in-law would always come over for Christmas. Every year since he was married, about 20, 30 years, his mother-in-law would always come over to his house for Christmas. And the last year he decided to make an exception. He decided to let her in the house. Mothers-in-law. But anyway, they're not that bad, so forget about trying to keep your mother-in-law out of the house. So instead, looking at all the bad parts of life, we look at the good parts of life. And that way, that positive attitude, a bit of fun, energy comes up, and you find that you have that energy. And when you create that energy, not through the negativity, no, through looking at, so simple, just, you've got a choice between looking at the Snoopy way or the Charlie Brown way. Which way are you going to choose? And if you choose that positive one, you find that you have so much energy, which means you can do so much, and you're not so much a pain in the ass to live with. Come on, this is where Buddhist compassion comes in. You've got to think of the other people who have to put up with you. They're going to have to put up with you because it's not just a weekend. It's a long weekend. 3 or 4 days. So put a bit of energy and happiness and kindness into your life, and you find that when you do service and giving, you will find that that is what really makes you happy. So much so that teaching this in monasteries like Dhammasara, it becomes that you just want to give, want to do service, want to help somebody. So much so that sometimes there's a fight. Monks fighting. They did this in Thailand. They'd fight for who got the broom first to do the sweeping. It's my turn. No, no, you did it last week. I want to do it. I want to do it. I want to do it. You've got to be very fast to be able to do a service. When people realize what a wonderful opportunity that is. So I want you to go and volunteer for joining our committee. Volunteer for just going to work in an old people's home. Going to work just, you know, over Christmas to go and visit some people who don't have visitors over Christmas. Doing something which is really beautiful in life. And you feel that you spent your Christmas holidays serving. That's what Christmas is all about. It's supposed to be giving. Not giving gifts. Not giving presents, which is just so material. Human beings today, we don't need presents, so please don't even think of the idea of trying to give a monk a present or a nun a present. We don't need anything. And people do that, you know, they give presents, and I think, how am I going to get rid of this? Where am I going to get... Instead, give some service. Do some washing up or whatever it is. Or even better, I mean, there are lonely people. Just go do something beautiful for them. And if you can do that, or even if it's just the person sitting next to you, after the talk is finished, say, hi, how are you? Everything okay? Anything you ever need, please let me know. You know, if you need a lift somewhere, I live on the opposite side of Perth, who cares, I'm going to give you a lift home. That sort of stuff, that's a real giving and service, which creates this beautiful community. So, talk to each other, create that community, not just the people you know, not just your wife, you know, sitting next to you, and not just a beautiful young girl sitting next to you either, guys. Just be kind and give, and that way we create this beautiful service which will energize everyone and make this world a more beautiful, wonderful place in which we can enjoy living together, helping one another, serving one another, and that way there's nothing we can't solve and change and make the world a better place. Thank you for listening. Oh, come on, I said put energy into what you're doing. All those sadhus is just so depressing. Okay, now do it properly. Follow me. And Nance, oh, well, you have to join in as well. Okay, three big sadhus. Service. Sadhu. 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 That's what I mean. Service. Energy. Thank you very much. Okay, questions? If you're going to clap, clap properly. Thank you. Okay, the question first. Oops, I've lost them. Where they gone? Oops, no, you lost it too. Oh, here we go. The first one from Finland, Rudolf the reindeer. Dear Ajahn Brahm, from Rudolf, I am working so hard, I was really exhausted, but after listening to your talks, I can carry all the presents all night. Thank you, Rudolf. Read that one up. Edward Clark, can monks take naps during the day? They can take anything because we live on gifts. So if you give us a nap, we'll take it. If we can, because sometimes we get up early in the morning, and sometimes eating one meal a day, or sometimes a breakfast, but the main meal is the lunch, is a big meal. So sometimes people do, monks do take naps in the day, but I call it meditation. Meditating flat out. From Indonesia. Oh, we often have a bomb threat in here during Christmas and Waisak. Some of it really happened. What should we do to keep the positive energy in that tragedy? Number one, how many of the Christian population and the Buddhist population got killed by a bomb threat? How many died? Over Christmas, how many died in Indonesia? Car crashes. How many people died over that Christmas holiday period through cancers? Through liver failure, because they drank too much alcohol. So sometimes we should just use a bit of our logic, our reason, to see that there's, even in Indonesia, if there's any interreligious disharmony, more people will die in Java Island through car crashes than they will by going to a church or a temple in any bomb threat. So please keep it in perspective. Well, after the London underground bombings a few years ago, many people said, no, they don't want to go on the underground anymore, it's too dangerous. But at least the people in London were rational when somebody pointed out that even if they have one such bombing every year, what happened in, I forget how many years ago, 2014 or 17, I don't know, anyway, even if they have one underground bombing, as they did have in London, every year, it will still be a 10 or 20 times more safe to travel on the underground trains than drive to work. Are we afraid of driving to work? Even though it's dangerous. A lot of people die on the roads. So you better not ride to work. It's dangerous to go to work. You get stressed out. You get heart attacks. It's not a healthy place to go. So stay at home. Don't work. For your health. Good excuse, isn't it? At least you can do that over Christmas period anyway. But if there is a bomb threat there, remember that, number one, are very unlikely you're going to die. More likely to die of these other diseases like cancers and diabetes, especially in Indonesia. Those are things you can do something about. But we don't. Bomb threats, you can't do too much about it unless the police does something about it. Be vigilant. Chances of you dying are very, very, very small. So don't worry about it too much. You go to Christians in Indonesia, go to your churches, go to your mosques, go to your temples, and don't show any fear. And if you do die, if you do happen to be the person in the temple where the bomb goes off, in Buddhism, traditional Buddhism, if you die in a Buddhist temple where you see the Buddha right in front of you in the statue. That's your last thing you see when you die. That is a first class ticket up to heaven. No worries at all. So if that happens to be you, you're so lucky. It has happened. Once here, somebody died right in front of me. One person had a heart attack at the Bodhinyana Monastery. People die, they're going to die somewhere. So I remember the family, when their, I think, father or whatever it was, died at Bodhinyana Monastery right in front of the hall. They were so overjoyed. Not that he died, but overjoyed he died there. They knew he was going to die, so that's a great place to die. Well chosen. Right in the temple, just seeing the monks, right in front of our main hall. Wow! That is just first class, express ticket. Right up to heaven. They're not even first class. In Singapore Airlines, they have suites. Suites class. That's above the first class. Even better than that, your own private luxury jet. Right up to heaven, if you die in the temple. So, if you do happen to be in a temple when there's a big bomb explosion and you die, so lucky! You go to heaven straight away, no worries. No, even if you have been a bit of a scallywag and got all this bad karma, that's all taken away. So, you look at the positive side, and that's actually why we don't get upset. And we just enjoy our Christmas, enjoy our going to the temples, going to the mosques. That's all right, so we enjoy those. We get a lot of happiness. We get a lot of uplift there. So don't let anyone stop you. So that is why I go to these places. I'm never afraid. Just let it happen. And because I'm not afraid, nothing ever happens to me. I have such a boring life. So anyway, those are the answers to those two questions here. From Edward, from somebody in Indonesia, and from Rudolph. Any questions from the floor here? Very good. Okay, so I will know the questions here. So I wish you all blessings of the holiday season. So because I'm a Buddhist, you can't really say Merry Christmas, so I say Merry Buddhamas to you all. And have a wonderful day tomorrow and the next day with your family. Let's now pay respects to the Buddha Dharma Sangha.